Good morning and welcome to Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Kyle Palmer, sitting in for Steve Kraske, who's at the Republican Party National Convention in Cleveland this week. In fact, we're going to talk to Steve live from Cleveland in just a bit. But first, we want to catch our listeners up to the latest happening in both Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and here in Kansas City. The latest spasm of violence involving police hit closer to home this time when it was revealed yesterday that a man with ties to Kansas City shot and killed three Baton Rouge police officers, wounded three more before being shot and killed himself. We'll hear more about the situation in Baton Rouge in just a minute, but first to the investigation here in Kansas City, we invite in KCUR's Sam Zeff, who's been reporting this since last night. Good morning, Sam.
Morning, Kyle.
So you were on the scene last night. Two separate addresses in South Kansas City were the target of investigations by local law enforcement. Those addresses linked to this suspected shooter, Gavin Eugene Long. What do we know this morning?
So the first address is linked to a house apparently owned by his parents on 77th Terrace just off of Troost. I went and found court documents that linked the house to the shooter. He had a divorce and also a tax delinquency papers filed against him. Both of those cases came back to the address on 77th Avenue. Just down the street at an apartment complex off of 80th and Campbell, Campbell being almost right between Holmes and Troost, there was an apartment that the FBI raided. They got there about 6 p.m. yesterday, left around 9. They had what they called their evidence response team. There were FBI agents on scene being supported by Kansas City, Missouri police. For about 3 hours, they brought out boxes of evidence. We don't know what that is yet. The FBI has not commented, but brought out several boxes of evidence, loaded it into a trailer, left there a little bit after 9 o'clock. The residents on 77th Terrace, reporters got to that address before the authorities did. They were met at the door by a man carrying a long gun, most probably a shotgun. Soon after that, police swarmed the area. They locked it up tight. Eventually arrested the man in the house, a man named Cameron Fryer, on a seatbelt violation. He apparently got ticketed for not wearing his seatbelt. He didn't show up, and there was a bench warrant. He was eventually released on a signature bond. Also, the FBI has not commented whether they've interrogated Cameron Fryer or if he has any connection to the case.
Okay, so we don't know any connection at all yet about the man who was arrested or the connection to the possible shooter. What do we know about this suspected shooter, Gavin Long?
He grew up, looked like he grew up around here, graduated from Grandview High School. CNN reported that he was here not long ago and rented a car, which took him to Dallas, Texas, eventually, of course, making his way to Baton Rouge. He had an enormous footprint on social media and on the internet. He had a YouTube channel, had podcasts, was a self-published author. Some of his many websites, it turns out, comes back to Kansas City. How long he was here or how long it's been since he's been here outside of the car rental a few days ago, we do not know. Right out of high school, he apparently went into the Marine Corps, where he spent 5 years, rising to the rank of sergeant, E5. According to the New York Times, he spent a year in Iraq and was honorably discharged. Then, according to his own website, he travels around the world. He eventually, for a semester, lands at the University of Alabama, where in 2012 he makes the dean's list in his one semester there. His ties here, though, how long he was here before he went to, he rented the car and went to Dallas, we don't know at this point.
And, you know, in all of his voluminous online materials that you found, is there any indication of motive, any connection to previous police shootings, violence against African Americans?
Well, he certainly talked about that. He seemed to be exercised about the killing of African Americans in Minnesota and in Baton Rouge, but he did not specifically rant about that. His podcast and his YouTube videos covered a wide range of material, from health and nutrition to more radical views that we heard about police shootings.
As KCUR, Sam Zeffi's been reporting on the investigation into the suspected shooter of three Baton Rouge police officers who has ties here to Kansas City. Sam, thank you very much.
Of course.
Now to Baton Rouge, the latest sad landmark in this summer of violence. KCUR's Frank Morris is there now reporting for NPR. Frank, good morning.
Okay, how you doing?
Good morning to you. And in studio, KCUR's elections editor Amy Jeffries joins us, and she lived and reported in Baton Rouge for 4 years. In fact, was the news director at the public radio station there up until this past March. Amy, thank you for joining us.
Thanks.
So, Frank, to you first. You've been on the scene there since last night. What's happening there today?
Well, you know, I mean, as people are getting ready for vigils, people are still talking about how this shooting affects the racial climate in this city, which may be a little bit strained to begin with. I wouldn't say it's tense here, but it's certainly, you know, As someone said, it seems like this is not over, but people are kind of hunkering down.
And I understand that you just arrived at the scene of yesterday's shooting. Can you describe for us what you're seeing, what the situation looks like now?
Well, the situation, as you might expect, is primarily a bunch of TV crews filming, from across the gas station gas lot. I'm over by the beauty supply, Hair Crown Beauty Supply store where the shooter was first sighted. There were a lot of people around. There's a little memorial that, you know, every once in a while someone will come up and lay a balloon down by the sign, the gas station sign. But there are many more TV photographers than, you know, say, police officers here at the moment.
Amy, to you here in the studio, I wonder, you know Baton Rouge well. Can mm-hmm. you give us a sense of where in the city this shooting occurred? What's around it? What's the local context?
Yeah, I mean, where Frank is standing right now is on a thoroughfare called Airline Highway. The Baton Rouge Police Headquarters is just about a mile or less from there. And it's also not very far from Florida Boulevard, which is the kind of dividing line in Baton Rouge that Troost is here in Kansas City. And I used to live just a couple of blocks from that line. And, you know, occasionally I would walk around the neighborhood and cross the line. And I would get sometimes, you know, funny looks. It was an awkward thing to cross those lines in Baton Rouge. Even though, as Frank describes it, you know, it's not necessarily tense. You know, I don't think that people would describe it that way at all. There's a lot of letting of sleeping dogs to lie that goes on there.
So give us a sense of Baton Rouge's history. What, why this place and why this time in your estimation?
Sure. Well, you know, in the wake of Alton Sterling's death, he was the man who was shot and killed by Baton Rouge police officers earlier this month. Some people were characterizing the place as harmonious, as having racial harmony. And I would indeed say that it is quiet, even though Baton Rouge has a very strong history of civil rights activism. The bus boycotts that many of us think of as a major flashpoint in the civil rights movement, they started in Baton Rouge. But living there in recent years, it really felt like a community that was resigned. You know, things are the way they are, so, you know, let it go and have a crawfish boil and a good time. And trust me, I do like a good crawfish boil.
Going back to Frank.
You know, in a very, very limited amount of time that we've actually been speaking to people here, I got a sense that that's been disturbed. That sense, and that being a place that actually attracts terrorism because of this shooting that happened earlier this month, has sort of stirred up, and the shooting, of course, really stirred up some bad feelings. I talked to a gal making omelets today at the hotel, and she said, you know, the killings aren't going to end until some of these police officers get convicted. And saw another acquittal today in Baltimore. And so there is an issue here.
Yeah, I mean, is there a sense, have you talked to people, Frank, about, you know, this man has connections to Kansas City, was an outsider, came there, you know, possibly attracted to that city because of the violence that had occurred? Do people feel attacked themselves, like they're the center of unwanted attention?
That is a good question, Kyle, and I will put that to some people, but I haven't really posed that question just that way.
Amy, final thoughts on Baton Rouge, your former home?
Yeah, you know, I suspect that there probably is going to be some resentment that Gavin Long chose Baton Rouge to make the statement that he made. You had leaders of protests, leaders in the community just last week as protests were happening there saying, you know, we're not Ferguson. And this is going to stir things up, as Frank says. And there's a lot in Baton Rouge's history that hasn't been dealt with, a lot of inequities and disparities and lines that have not been addressed.
That's Amy Jeffries in studio. Thank you. And Frank Morris in Baton Rouge reporting for NPR. Thank you both for joining us.
Good to be here.
So you get a sense many communities around the country, including Kansas City, watch what's happened in Baton Rouge or Dallas, just maybe like they watched in Ferguson a couple of years ago, and think it can't happen here or we can't let it happen here. To this end, Sunday, the Kansas City Crime Commission took out a full-page ad in the Kansas City Star urging readers to make sure local law enforcement feels supported. We now invite in Rick Armstrong. He's a member of the commission and a former police chief of Kansas City, Kansas. Mr. Armstrong, thank you for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
I'll ask you about the ad in just a moment, but it kind of turned out to be a tragic coincidence that it was published the morning of this shooting in Baton Rouge that took the lives of three law enforcement officers. I wonder how were you feeling yesterday in light of that event, and then, of course, the news that the shooter had connections to Kansas City?
I think tragically on both accounts. Obviously, we were looking for the ad to come out yesterday to show our support for our local law enforcement here in Kansas City in light of Dallas and the other tragedies happening around the country. And the timing was obviously unfortunate, but also poignant to point out that when this happened, you know, yesterday, two officers being shot, three officers being shot, that it brings it back home. And then, of course, the local connection from the shooter being from Kansas City made it that much worse.
Do you have, even before yesterday, did you feel an undercurrent of it can't happen here or it could happen here? What's your perspective on that?
Well, I think we're aware that it could happen anywhere. The fact that it hasn't happened here, I think, is in large part due to the leadership of law enforcement and our political leadership here in Kansas City, as well as the great people that live here. I think that looking back at the Royals parade, 800,000 people in a small area and very few events, you know, no tragedies, no violence, indicates that the people that live and operate and work in Kansas City, for the most part, get along, but it doesn't mean that we're immune from a tragedy happening here. It just says that we should be very keenly aware of what's happening around the country and make sure that we do everything within our power here to keep Kansas City safe.
And what would that entail? I mean, just to push your thinking a bit, I mean, we heard from Amy just a couple minutes ago that, you know, cities like Baton Rouge would have said the same thing 3-4 weeks ago, a month ago. What do you think can be done to continue that trend here?
Well, I think that I agreed. I don't disagree with some of her comments. You're thinking it's not going to happen here until the event occurs. I think for us, it's, you know, just pushing out good information, accurate information, you know, understanding that there, you know, that law enforcement is a part of the solution. We can't demonize the police. They're going to have to play a role in how we make our city safer. You know, it's kind of a basic tenet of community policing has been, dating back from, you know, the 1800s, the police are the public and the public are the police. You know, our officers, our men and women who put on the uniform every day are the people who live next door to you. They're the people from the community who have a vested interest in keeping our community safe. And that's not to suggest that when something occurs involving law enforcement that a fair process has to occur and an investigation that's transparent, it's fair. And that that we understand that these incidents are going to happen. People are human, and events are going to occur. But we seem to be poised, at least from a media perspective for the next event, and then we jump into it. We put information out, oftentimes unedited, unvetted, and people react to that. I think that we have to slow down and make sure that we are working and talking daily toward having a good understanding of what's taking place. And it kind of starts from the premise, are we a good place to live, and do we trust our police, and does the police have the right to trust its public? And right now, everyone's in a position to be concerned based on what's happening around the country.
Rick Armstrong with the Kansas City Crime Commission. You know, our listeners may not be aware, but you not only have you been in law enforcement for decades, you yourself have been wounded in the line of duty. How do you feel when you hear news of things like Baton Rouge or Dallas?
Well, I think the perspective of being shot was something that I didn't blame the community. It was obviously the person who did the shooting, and I think that's sort of a perspective that is important. If there's a police shooting out here in the country, we tend to polarize it so quickly. We tend to demonize the police. We tend to ask the first question: what was the color or the ethnicity of the officer to the shooting, and what was the ethnicity of the victim? And I think that it's important to recognize that these are individual events happening in isolated places around the country, and not to suggest that there isn't a conversation that needs to be had. But you know, the Harvard study that came out last week that looked at a 10-year profile of 10 major cities in the United States did not show a bias when it came to the police decision making when it came to shooting. There was not a cultural bias. And it's not to suggest that there aren't issues or problems with other aspects of our, you know, police and community interaction, but I think that idea that if an event occurs, that we don't immediately rush to judgment and color it as an issue of bias, because I think that many times that's unfair.
You know, it has become kind of a common narrative over the last few months that police relations, you know, between the police and communities, especially communities of color, has become worse. In your decades of experience on the force and in law enforcement, is that your perspective? Do you feel like relations now are worse than they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and beyond?
I think that's a fair question. I would suggest that the way that we communicate, you know, with mass media, with social media, there's so much more information out there, and it's known so quickly. And, you know, literally anybody can post to Facebook or Twitter or whatever, and it goes viral immediately. And so we're pushing a lot more information. My perception in being out in the community and working with our public, it's not different. In fact, I would say it's very positive. Just an event over the weekend out at the Chiefs Stadium, I watched all the people taking pictures with police officers in groups, and how friendly the officers were to the public, and how accessible they made themselves. And also this, you know, it was a very, very diverse group of interactions. And so I'm not seeing that hatred or that bias that seems to be the talk of conversation. But when a shooting occurs, when something happens around the country that goes up on social media, and then the media starts covering it, I think that the first conversation turns toward this issue of how things change. And I obviously the fact that people are concerned that there's real issues here, and I make sure that we understand there are issues out there. But I think that the way that we approach this is to collectively, both the communities, the political leaders, and the law enforcement working together to find common solutions, to make sure that we have good lines of communication, and we keep working on that trust that's essential.
That's Rick Armstrong, a member of the Kansas City Crime Commission, also a former police chief in Kansas City, Kansas. Mr. Armstrong, thank you so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Now moving to a more national perspective, so to speak, both on these events and politically in the United States. Joining us now via Skype is the normal up-to-date host, Steve Kraske, a guy you may have heard of. He's in Cleveland this week covering the Republican National Convention for the Kansas City Star. Steve, it seems odd that I'm asking you the questions today, but here we are. I'm in the host chair.
Well, it's about time, and thank you for identifying me as normal. That may be the first time you've done that.
Or regular, yeah, whatever you want to go. We are going to talk about the impact of this latest round of violence, unfortunately, that occurred in Baton Rouge, what effect that had in Cleveland. First, I'd just like to know, you've been there for about a day now. Set the scene for us. What's it like in Cleveland?
Well, you know, it's easy to get around, easier than I thought it was going to be. You know, I rented a car and haven't had any trouble maneuvering through the city. What's impressive, as your previous guests have said, Kyle, is just the level of law enforcement here It's breathtaking. I was sitting in my hotel room in Beechwood, Ohio this morning, 23 minutes from downtown Cleveland, and the police cars were, you know, coming through the Kansas Delegation parking lot every few minutes. It was just stunning to me. No, I should hasten to add, no sense of any threat to the Kansas delegation. This struck me as just pretty much routine patrol. Just amazing, you know, given what's happened in the country in the last few days, and the level of police presence here is breathtaking.
And what are you going to be looking for this week? What are you there focused on?
Well, I'm here to cover the Kansas delegation. My colleague Dave Helling is covering Missouri's delegation. Lots of different speakers coming, you know, before the group every morning, trying to keep tabs on how they're going to vote when they cast ballots for presidential nominees and vice presidential nominees, that kind of thing. So that's my primary duty.
Have you had a chance in the past day to speak to people since the shootings in Baton Rouge, and has it affected their outlook?
You know, surprisingly, I have spoken to people, but surprisingly, no, Kyle. The sense here, you know, you wonder if people aren't getting a little bit numb to all the violence we've had around the country in recent years, in recent months. You know, people here are saying, hey, you know, this is tragic, this is horrific, but it's not going to interrupt our weeks here. We're determined to go forward and enjoy the experience of being a national convention delegate. For so many of these folks, this is sort of the crown jewel in long careers working in the trenches for the Kansas Republican Party, and they want to sit back and enjoy their weeks.
Got word that Kansas Secretary of State Chris Kobach spoke with a delegation this morning. What was his message?
You know, he spoke very directly, very plainly about what he views as the quality of the National Convention platform that delegates will be voting on this afternoon, in fact. That's the first item of business coming up after lunch here in Cleveland. He described it as the most conservative platform in the history of the Republican Party, even going so far as to point out that, hey, this platform allows public schools to teach the Bible, but only as a form of literature. That's how Secretary of State Kobach put it. He says the courts have approved that kind of involvement, and sort of that's sort of where things are here. So, you know, he says on abortion, on guns, on immigration, this platform could hardly be more conservative, and as a very staunch conservative himself, he endorses it heartily, Kyle.
And, I mean, you're getting a sense entering the week that the dump Trump movement is itself dumped.
Yeah, you know, it just doesn't seem to have any legs. The National Party, Rince Priebus, the National GOP chair, they pretty much stepped on it, Kyle, which is not to say there aren't plenty of delegates, even in the Kansas and Missouri delegations, who wish this thing was playing out a little bit differently. Still a lot of trepidation about Donald Trump for all the reasons our listeners might imagine. But, you know, there's no sense here that there's going to be any concerted effort to stop this thing going forward.
Well, that's KCUR's up-to-date host, Steve Kraske, from one championship city to another, going from Kansas City to Cleveland. He will also be in Philadelphia next week for the Democratic National Convention. Steve, thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to do it, Kyle.